Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies to the glory of God and his kingdom. Few people that I know have a better grasp on the challenges that we're facing, particularly from those domestic enemies, than our first guest. His name is George Raceley. He is, I'm fond of saying, our duty genius around here. Take great pride in his membership in Mensa, as well as the immense insights that he brings on the basis of a lifetime really spent in political campaigns and political and public policy affairs. These days, he is the editor-in-chief of a terrific newsletter that Richard Viguerie sponsors called Conservative HQ. And he is, just a go-to guy, particularly on the challenges that we're facing at the moment, from efforts to suppress our consciousness of what's going on and perhaps our freedoms to respond to it. George Raceley, as always, it's great to have you with us. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
To begin, you and I last talked, I think, shortly after Joe Biden did that horrific speech at Independence Hall and a massive throwdown, I think it's fair to say, about the so-called MAGA Republicans, Make America Great Again Republicans. In the intervening period, I think it's fair to say what he said and encouraged has further metastasized. In recent days, a candidate for the United States Senate from Ohio actually used the phrase killing the Republican extremist movement. Exactly what he meant by that is to be determined, but it sounds pretty ominous, as do the comments to the effect that, you know, a bunch of semi-fascists, we've got an extremist agenda, this is all about domestic terrorism and so on. So give us your perspective, George, as a man of considerable intelligence as well as insight into things political. Where are we and where are we headed?
Well, in politics, going back into the early 70s when I got started, I have never heard a candidate use the word killing in reference to their opponent. And Tim Ryan's astonishing comments were certainly in the same vein as Biden's triumph of the will speech in Philadelphia. And we see that this rhetoric is, you know, there's a sort of a scale, if you will, and it's moving from simply talking about it to encouraging it. We see Republican operatives and Trump associates receiving subpoenas for records that are totally unrelated to any federal criminal statute. We see the Department of Justice announcing that the FBI is going to, in essence, be investigating non-crime biases, they say. So that's another fake reason for them to come and intimidate conservatives. If you say something or post something on social media they don't like, FBI agents are going to show up at your door. And the purpose of that is to intimidate. And of course, after intimidation comes incarceration.
Right. We did a program the other day with our Committee on the Present Danger China about the othering of MAGA and and for that matter, you know, Christian nationalists, as they're being called, and, you know, constitutionalists and veterans and gun owners and, you know, a considerable proportion, if not actually a sizable majority of the American people are all being now vilified in this fashion. George, we're told that the corrective is going to be an election in November. And I wanted to ask you, again, with your acumen about political trends, how you see things shaking out in that election cycle. On the one hand, I think there's clearly a response being seen to these kinds of comments and threats and behavior. I think there's also obviously a lot of excitement, shall we say, or enthusiasm being energized as a result of the abortion decision out of the Supreme Court. So sort of net this out for us is where we stand on this election.
The good news is that Biden's speech prompted a huge negative reaction among conservatives and even just your average Republican-oriented voter. I mean, they got the message, but it wasn't the one that Biden wanted them to get. And so that's motivated a lot of people who up until that point had not been terribly motivated. That's on the Republican side. On the far left, on the other hand, they are also motivated because they've now been given the go-ahead for all of the stuff that they did in the lead up to the 2020 election. And so they're certainly not letting up. And anybody that thinks that this is just another election where the votes are going to be counted fairly and the loser is going to come out and shake hands with the winner and everybody's going to sing kumbaya after the polls closed is fooling themselves. The Democrats are not going to give up power unless we can push the results of the election out of the margin of fraud and chaos.
Yeah. And this is such an important point, and I know you've been spending a lot of time on election integrity issue, having been through a lot of elections in the course of your life as a consultant, as a staff member, as a valued advisor. The dangers that we saw of a, electoral manipulation, to say the least, if not outright fraud and hijacked results in 2020. Unfortunately, a lot of the mechanics for accomplishing that, whether it was machines or whether it's bad voter rolls or whether it's the seminal problem of these mail-in ballots, are in place still in a lot of states around the country. I just wonder whether your thoughts are, if we do it again, we're going to have similar results or different ones.
Well, the good news is that several key states, Florida and Georgia among them, have instituted election reforms that will prohibit some of the fraud and chaos producing things that happened in 2020. The bad news is that three crucial states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, have not. And while they don't have the excuse of COVID for implementing some of these things, there's nothing to prevent them from doing much of the same things.
It's too big to steal. And I think that goes back to your earlier point. We're going to come back to more of all of this with the great George Raisley of Conservative HQ, Victor Vigory's terrific newsletter, right after this.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, the dictators of communist China and Russia are holding their first face-to-face meeting since February. If past experience is any guide, no good will come of it. At the last such meeting, Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin rolled out, with great fanfare, their country's so-called No Limits partnership. What they did not announce, but apparently finalized, was an agreement that the Chinese Communist Party would support Russia's invasion of Ukraine once Beijing's genocide games were finished. The question is, will the two tyrants in the course of today's rendezvous in Uzbekistan now finalize plans for Russia to reciprocate by supporting the CCP's invasion of Taiwan once it completes a party congress next month at which Xi is expected to get a third term? And if so, will they agree to attack as well our assets, personnel, and territory? Deter them now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with George Raceley, one of our members of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, I'm proud to say, a very valued contributor to this program, a man with a wealth of experience in practical politics, the campaign version, as well as how do you assure that there are free and fair elections. He's covering all of these beats handsomely in his capacity as editor-in-chief of Conservative HQ, Richard Viguerie's newsletter. George, you were talking a little bit about the importance of overcoming the demonstrated ability of those of a mind to do this, to use voting systems or procedures or machinery to steal elections if there is not a very considerable distance between, you know, the winning candidate and the losing candidate. I think you did not mention what's happening in Arizona, another key swing state, and I'd be interested in whether they've gotten things fixed or whether things are still broken out there too. But to the extent that this comes down to, will it be a vote that is too big to steal? Are we looking at that kind of prospect, do you think?
Well, I left out Arizona because they did have a good reform bill pass and get signed into law, but a federal judge has enjoined it. And so whether or not they clean up the voter rolls and do those the necessary reforms that were in Jake Hoffman's bill has yet to be seen. This close to the election, it will be difficult to get that judge's ruling unwound.
And the behavior of Maricopa County, which was a serious problem, is these commissioners is once again of a piece with what we saw before, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the crucial thing is kind of to distinguish election crimes, which are illegal voting or the submission of illegal ballots from the chaos producing things like imaginary water pipes breaking so that the count can be stopped and the Democrats can figure out how many votes they need to inject into the system to come ahead. And what we all have to remember is that in terms of the Western democracies, the American Democrats are the only party that relies on election crimes and fraud as part of their campaign strategy. I mean, this is embedded in Democrat campaign strategy. And so Republicans are foolish in assuming that the Democrats operate by the same standards and traditions and mores that they do, because they don't.
The Marquess of Queensberry rules that seem to
don't apply.
Be governing the Republicans. George, this is really vital. I think that we understand that piece of the puzzle. There's another dimension of it that I also wanted to ask you about. And needless to say, I hope none of this eventuates, but I have become increasingly concerned, especially against the backdrop of what we talked about in the previous segment, the vitriol, the virulence, really, of what is being said about the political opposition now, whether they're MAGA Republicans or characterized some other way, may give rise to conditions under which, if the Democrats, the Democrats are convinced that it is too big a vote to steal, they simply will interfere with the election process itself, the holding of the elections, perhaps in some states, perhaps across the country, on one pretext or another. There may be provocations, there may be direct action, there may be blaming MAGA Republicans for a violent environment, martial law, pandemics, who knows? But tell me I'm wrong to be worrying about this, George, that that can't possibly happen, please, because I'm concerned that it could.
I wish I could tell you you're wrong, Frank, but I think it's a legitimate concern. And I think the tells leading up to that will be if we see suddenly Democrat headquarters mysteriously torched, if we see mysterious attacks on voting facilities or things like that, a la the Reichstag fire. And so one of the things that the Democrats are doing are making virtually every federal office a voter registration facility. And that's part of this mysterious Biden get out the vote executive order. And so, you know, if the if your local fish and wildlife office goes up in flames, it's going to get blamed on Republicans and conservatives and Trump supporters. And it'll be a pretext. And particularly, it'll be a pretext in some of these crucial states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
And so when we hear them talking about civil war, the left, this is another example of the kind of projection that we've been documenting on this program quite a bit. George, and let me just ask you pointedly, at the risk of copping to being an election denier, as they would have it, is there any doubt in your mind that there are vehicles for manipulating these votes that are in place today and that could materially affect the outcome of the elections? Did you think that happened in 2020?
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the tools are there and available to the Democrats. And you don't have to imagine software manipulation of Dominion voting machines, although I don't think that's entirely imaginary either. But just watch Dinesh D'Souza's 20,000 Mules, and you'll understand exactly how this works. Watch or read Molly Hemingway's book about the 2020 election, and you'll understand how this works. And some of it is clearly illegal. It's an election crime. Other is manipulation of the system. And again, pushing things into that margin of chaos where judges and bureaucrats decide elections rather than a majority of the citizens.
Yeah. Don't underestimate the significance of chaos in all of this. You're absolutely right, George. And let me just say, while we're recommending videos, there is a movie called Kill Chain that was done before the 2020 election, in which a whole host of prominent Democrats, including Senator Amy Klobuchar, one of the most vociferous of the people criticizing so-called election deniers, is seen warning that the machines used for these elections, you mentioned Dominion software and so on, are susceptible to fraud.
Yeah.
They've not made much mention of that since the 2020 election, I have to say, but it's right there on video. You can see it on, you know, streaming. Please check it out, folks. It's really required viewing before we get into this next election cycle. George Raisley, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. There's never a dearth of things to discuss with you. Your insights in all of them are so appreciated.
Well, thank you, Frank.
As I think really is the importance of the work that you're doing with Richard Viguerie to try to make sure that we do have free and fair elections and that the will of the American people is expressed for what I'm quite confident is the needed course correction from the trajectory of fundamental transformation we are clearly embarked upon at the hands of the radical left. God bless you, my friend. Keep up the
great
work.
Thank you, Frank.
Next up, we're going to speak to Scott Powell. We'll get another perspective on all of these topics from an author and expert on the history of the left and more right after this.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Dr. Scott Powell, a man that we consult with frequently on matters, well, of great import for our country, including the kind of political warfare that is underway at the moment and seems to be intensifying by the day. He has been studying these topics intensively for decades. He was the author of a seminal work about the radical left back in the Cold War, entitled Covert Cadre. More recently, he is the author of a terrific book about where we are at the moment, entitled Rediscovering America. He is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute and a great friend, and we're delighted to have him with us always. Scott Powell, welcome back to Securing America. You wrote a piece recently about the absurdity of Democrats calling MAGA Republicans fascists. And I want to explore that with you. Of course, that's hardly the only thing they're saying about people who want to make America great again or support Donald Trump or otherwise now seem to be falling into a group that is Christian, that is, pro-constitution, bears arms, and so much more. A good half of the population, at least, that are now being vilified in this fashion. What is going on here at the hands of, well, Joe Biden and the Democratic Party more generally these days?
Well, it's almost unbelievable that we could be in this place that we're in where one of our major parties accuses the other party of being fascist, the Democrats accusing Republicans and MAGA people as having some latent fascism within themselves, when the exact opposite is true. The mainstream now MAGA Republicans believe in freedom, in limited government, in limited representative government. They believe in transparency. They believe in the rule of law. They believe in the sovereignty of our nation and the need to have borders. And we could keep going down that list. And in being transparent, of course, they don't believe they have anything to hide. Now, our opponents on the other side who are accusing us of being fascists, they, in fact, are the ones that have a hidden agenda and who are not transparent about almost anything that they're pursuing.
How would you characterize that agenda, Scott?
Well, right now, I would say the agenda is to bring about a realignment of the United States with a global order, people have called it the New World Order.
The Great Reset.
The Great Reset. And there are different parties behind the scenes. We one day I hope we'll know the whole panoply and how they've interacted. But certainly Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum has recruited a huge number of corporate executives and political leaders of the so-called free world to join him in Davos. The camaraderie, the sort of country club type environment, which is very elite, that you're part of this elite that's going to remake the world. Klaus Schwab has a vision of population reduction, of eliminating the sovereignty of states, that the United States would be folded into a global order with global governance. We don't really know what that looks like, but we know that governments are... all governments have a struggle with the abuse of power. You look at the United Nations, which is the closest thing we have to sort of a global government right now. It is rife with corruption, utterly corrupt body. Why would we?
This arises, I think it's fair to say, from the unaccountability of those involved, the sort of international bureaucracy. But Scott, I mean, what you put your finger on here, I think you haven't used the term, but I know you're very familiar with it, is projection. It's where somebody claims that somebody else is doing what they themselves are doing. And as you say, they don't want to be caught at it. They don't want to be transparent about it, for sure. And whether it's a great reset, whether it's a new world order, whether it's the fundamental transformation of America, it is what I think the Democratic Party and the Biden administration and the whole coterie of Marxists that now seem to be in increasingly influential positions in our society, as well as in public policy, are all about, is it not?
It really appears to be so, and I think there's evidence that will prove that it is so, that there are many people within our country in elite positions of power that have committed treason and sedition against our country, against our Constitution.
I'm particularly struck, Scott, by the numbers of people who are actually in government at the moment, who have taken solemn oaths of office to support and defend our Constitution. And in fact, we are seeing them subverting it at every turn. Let me ask you this. The term fascism, and I think in this essay of yours, you very helpfully point out that it's an artifice, that there is a distinction between sort of the totalitarians of the left and the putative totalitarians of the right, namely the fascists and the Nazis. That in fact, these are all creatures of the left. Have I got that right?
You sure do. You sure do. And maybe one day we'll know how fascism was sort of marketed to be a right-wing phenomena, because it's never been a right-wing phenomena. It's a phenomena that came out of the left. Hitler was... led the National Socialist Party in Germany. Mussolini was a well-known socialist. He never renounced his socialism. All he did was merge socialism with nationalism and rebrand it as fascism. And then he joined alliance with you know, with Nazi Germany. So these people are all on the left. And I think perhaps it's the role of the Jews who, you know, after the war was over and the Holocaust was revealed and we all came to know, the Jewish community, which tends to be embrace socialism, couldn't afford to have fascism right next to socialism. They still wanted to champion socialism, but they wanted to condemn Hitler and fascism. And so it became a right-wing phenomenon, I believe. But
that's an interesting point. I've heard it described to Stalin, who wanted to try to sort of disassociate him from the Nazis, especially after the pact that Molotov and Ribbentrop had signed, which joined their forces for a time, was thrown out of the bus by Adolf Hitler. But whatever the provenance of it, the point is that we've been subjected, I think it's fair to say, to extensive, you know, sort of indoctrination, mm-hmm. that there's a kind of moral equivalence between the extremes of the right and the left. And perhaps this is something that those on the left are trying to, you know, perpetuate in this current attack. But Scott, I did want to ask you about...
You're so right about that, Frank, though. You are so right about that.
I wanted to ask you about one other piece of this, if I could, before we take a short break. There is an enormous amount of rhetorical energy being expended at the moment by Biden and others on his team about democracy. And there seems to be very little focus being given by such people to a constitutional republic, which is what we are, after all, not a democracy. Help us understand the distinction between the two, if you would.
Well, if we could go back to the debate of our founders, these great statesmen who were extraordinarily well-learned and studied all the models of governance from the ancient world to the, you know, the more modern European basket of understanding. I mean, so much philosophy came out of Europe, and they found democracy wanting for the simple reason that democracy tends to devolve into mobocracy. It is.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Dr. Scott Powell, a man that we consult with frequently on matters, well, of great import for our country, including the kind of political warfare that is underway at the moment and seems to be intensifying by the day. He has been studying these topics intensively for decades. He was the author of a seminal work about the radical left back in the Cold War, entitled Covert Cadre. More recently, he is the author of a terrific book about where we are at the moment, entitled Rediscovering America. He is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute and a great friend, and we're delighted to have him with us always. Scott Powell, welcome back to Securing America. You wrote a piece recently about the absurdity of Democrats calling MAGA Republicans fascists. And I want to explore that with you. Of course, that's hardly the only thing they're saying about people who want to make America great again or support Donald Trump or otherwise now seem to be falling into a group that is Christian, that is, you know, pro-constitution, bears arms, and so much more. A good half of the population, at least, that are now being vilified in this fashion. What is going on here at the hands of, well, Joe Biden and the Democratic Party more generally these days?
Well, it's almost unbelievable that we could be in this place that we're in, where one of our major parties accuses the other party of being fascist, the Democrats accusing Republicans and MAGA people as having some latent fascism within themselves, when the exact opposite is true. The mainstream now MAGA Republicans believe in freedom, in limited government, in limited representative government. They believe in transparency. They believe in the rule of law. They believe in the sovereignty of our nation and the need to have borders. And we could keep going down that list. And in being transparent, of course, they don't believe they have anything to hide. Now, our opponents on the other side, who are accusing us of being fascists, they, in fact, are the ones that have a hidden agenda and who are not transparent about almost anything that they're pursuing.
How would you characterize that agenda, Scott?
Well, right now, I would say the agenda is to bring about a realignment of the United States with a global order, people have called it the New World Order.
The Great Reset.
The Great Reset. And there are different parties behind the scenes. We one day, I hope we'll know the whole panoply and how they've interacted. But certainly Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum has recruited a huge number of corporate executives and political leaders of the so-called free world to join him in Davos, the camaraderie, the sort of country club type environment, which is very elite, which you're part of this elite that's going to remake the world. Klaus Schwab has a vision of population reduction, of eliminating the sovereignty of states, that the United States would be folded into a global order with global governance. We don't really know what that looks like, but we know that all governments have a struggle with the abuse of power. You look at the United Nations, which is the closest thing we have to sort of a global government right now. It is rife with corruption, utterly corrupt body. Why would we?
This arises, I think it's fair to say, from the unaccountability of those involved, the sort of international bureaucracy. But Scott, I mean, what you put your finger on here, I think you haven't used the term, but I know you're very familiar with it, is projection. It's where somebody claims that somebody else is doing what they themselves are doing. And as you say, they don't want to be caught at it. They don't want to be transparent about it, for sure. And whether it's a Great Reset, whether it's a New World Order, whether it's the fundamental transformation of America, it is what I think the Democratic Party and the Biden administration and a whole coterie of Marxists that now seem to be in increasingly influential positions in our society, as well as in public policy, are all about, is it not?
It really appears to be so, and I think there's evidence that will prove that it is so, that there are many people within our country in elite positions of power that have committed treason and sedition against our country, against our Constitution.
I'm particularly struck, Scott, by the numbers of people who are actually in government at the moment, who have taken solemn oaths of office to support and defend our Constitution. And in fact, we are seeing them subverting it at every turn. Let me ask you this. The term fascism, and I think in this essay of yours, you very helpfully point out that it's an artifice, that there is a distinction between sort of the totalitarians of the left and the putative totalitarians of the right, namely the fascists and the Nazis. In fact, these are all creatures of the left. Have I got that right?
You sure do. You sure do. And maybe one day we'll know how fascism was, you know, was sort of marketed to be a right-wing phenomena, because it's never been a right-wing phenomena. It's a phenomena that came out of the left. Hitler was, you know, led the National Socialist Party in Germany. Mussolini was a well-known socialist. He never renounced his socialism. All he did was merge socialism with nationalism and rebrand it as fascism. And then he joined alliance with Nazi Germany. So these people are all on the left. And I think perhaps it's the role of the Jews who, you know, after the war was over and the Holocaust was revealed and we all came to know, the Jewish community, which tends to be embrace socialism, couldn't afford to have fascism right next to socialism. They still wanted to champion socialism, but they wanted to condemn Hitler and fascism. And so it became a right-wing phenomenon, I believe. But
that's an interesting point. I've heard it described to Stalin, who wanted to try to sort of disassociate him from the Nazis, especially after the pact that Molotov and Ribbentrop had signed, which joined their forces for a time, was thrown out of the bus by Adolf Hitler. But whatever the provenance of it, the point is that we've been subjected, I think it's fair to say, to extensive, you know, sort of indoctrination, mm-hmm. that there's a kind of moral equivalence between the extremes of the right and the left. And perhaps this is something that those on the left are trying to, you know, perpetuate in this current attack. But Scott, I did want to ask you about...
You're so right about that, Frank, though. You are so right about that.
I wanted to ask you about one other piece of this, if I could, before we take a short break. There is an enormous amount of rhetorical energy being expended at the moment by Biden and others on his team about democracy. And there seems to be very little focus being given by such people to a constitutional republic, which is what we are, after all, not a democracy. Help us understand the distinction between the two, if you would.
Well, if we could go back to the debate of our founders, these great statesmen who were extraordinarily well-learned and studied all the models of governance from the ancient world to the, you know, the more modern European basket of understanding. I mean, so much philosophy came out of Europe. And they found democracy wanting for the simple reason that democracy tends to devolve into mobocracy. It is prone to corruption, to factions, to infighting, to intrigue, to all the things that subvert a nation, really. And that's why pure democracies have never worked. So they like the democratic mechanism. That is, that the people should be involved in choosing who governs them and limiting their government and so forth. That comes from the people. They were very insistent that this new country they were building would have that element of democratic participation of people. But they decided that a constitutional republic that spelled out the limits of power and divided that power, because even they understood that even if we get this right with a constitutional republic based on law, we still have the problem of human nature, which tends to, you know, power corrupts. So they divided up the power into three branches. They created a federal system where we have federal government competing against the state government, and in the Constitution, in the
checks and balances. We're going to come back to how those operate today, and particularly are being threatened today by some who seek to supplant our constitutional republic. Something altogether different. More with Scott Powell. Dr. Powell is the author of Rediscovering America, right after this. Welcome back. Dr. Scott Powell is with us, and we are continuing our conversation that began with a, well, assessment of what is motivating people who are currently calling MAGA Republicans fascists and worse. We've had, you know, them described as domestic terrorists, as enemies of the state. Well, in the words of Tim Ryan, a candidate for the United States Senate in Ohio, he's actually talking about killing the Republican extremist movement. What exactly that means is not entirely clear, but it doesn't sound as though it's the kind of political conversation and comity that has made our democratic republic work, despite any number of difficulties, of course, but is seemingly imperiling the republic at the moment. And Scott, I hated to interrupt you, but you were making a really important point, which is sort of baked into your book, Rediscovering America, that the founders had a genius for trying to provide a framework for self-governance that would be resistant to the sorts of abuses that they had seen in the past and that they thought were entirely possible in the future, human nature being what it is. So there was a system of checks and balances at the federal level. There was the federal and state divisions of responsibility. There was limited government as the sort of cornerstone of it all. And I just would ask you to reflect on how far we have come from those foundational principles, especially during this present environment and presidency of Joe Biden.
Well, we've come a long way in a short period of time. I mean, the I'd say the trajectory was in place really through. We could trace it back to Wilson, but certainly in the FDR years, and we had a big step forward of aggrandizing state power through 9/11 and what was created after 9/11. But in this particular, and then the Obama years was an aggrandizement of government power, where really three sectors of our economy came under really the control of government. That was the healthcare sector, the banking sector, and the energy sector, which represented more than a third of our overall economy. We have that in spades now and more. We now have the media in control by the government. This is hard to believe. And a lot of people are still operating on a normalcy bias, and that is that they think that we have this diversity of opinion in the media, that it's you have different stations, ABC, NBC, CBS, then you have the cable networks and so forth. And there's
social media.
Yeah, and then social media, and that there's this multiplicity of voices. But what we're discovering is that our media is largely influenced and controlled by our government, creating narratives that get parroted by all of the stations and putting off limits certain topics. Important topics such as election integrity,
right?
Where stations
to the point where people who want to talk about those are being actually silenced and prevented from having access to these platforms.
I mean, Biden said that specifically in his Philadelphia speech with a red background. He went after those people that questioned the election. And it's not that they're
election deniers, he calls them.
They're questioning, did we have an honest, fair election? Did the system that produces that delivers the voice of the people get subverted? And there's a lot of reason to believe that it was.
And Scott, of even greater concern in a way is the fact that most of the conditions that gave rise to that subversion, and I think you're right in characterizing it as such, are still in place. And we're headed into another election cycle in which they may well produce similarly distorted outcomes. And this is the problem with having had so successfully this suppression of information and canceling of people who, you know, questioned what actually had preceded it in 2020. If they can do it again, we may well find ourselves even further, I'm afraid, imperiled by those who want fundamentally to transform our country. Let me ask you finally about just kind of where this leaves us if we do not find some sort of corrective to this defamation, to the character assassination, to the effort seemingly to criminalize legitimate political opposition.
I don't think, I don't think that agenda can go forward. I think there are too many people now in America that have really woken up to this fascist element in the Democrat Party that is now operating our government. They see the restrictions that are made that are not logical, they're not rational. They see the abuse of power on so many different fronts. I mean, the whole COVID period has revealed so much about how the healthcare industry was corrupted and how our freedoms were just simply taken away. And the result was that we have this economic mess, supply chain problems, and all that we're experiencing now came out of this abuse of power. And this, and it, but it didn't just involve the United States. It was a global phenomenon. So we're reminded that this is a global effort to transform the world into a new order. And America is the country that blocks the way to its success. And believe me, I have a lot of immigrant friends who can speak on behalf of their countries. They look to America to maintain that position, to stop this socialist global order.
And this is why we are being targeted by all of those socialists, domestic and foreign. Scott Powell, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but thank you. This is such an illuminating conversation. I appreciate tremendously the work you do at the Discovery Institute and look forward to our next visit with you here soon.
Thank you, Frank.
Securing America. Thank you. God bless
you. Thank you.
Next up, we'll speak with Becky Garrettson of Eagle Forum, Alabama, about another abuse of power against her and us right after this.